Hey there, and welcome to 0-1 Humans, a podcast that tells stories of ordinary people who have made some extraordinary life choices. Join us as we talk to artists, travelers, writers, athletes, entrepreneurs, and just generally good people to find out the backstory of how they got going from 0 to 1. My name is Terrence, and I am your host. In 2014, the Yeo brothers found themselves at a crossroad in life. Their dad had just passed away, leaving behind a carpentry business that was ridden in debt. In this episode, we hear about the journey of three young millennials as they took over a traditional business. We discuss challenges they faced in the early days, how they are infusing new ideas to help steer the company towards the future, and a special sustainability project to turn waste wood into bespoke pieces for you and I. Hey Ryan, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having us. Thank you for having me.
And today I'm super excited to explore the world of carpentry and woodwork with you. But before we begin, can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Okay, so I am Ryan. I am from Roger & Sons. I'm one of the three sons. So I'm the youngest one. I'm about 25 this year. My eldest brother is 32. My second brother is 29, and together we run this company called Roger & Sons, and we do bespoke carpentry.
Okay, and I'm pretty sure we're going to find out more about what Roger & Sons represents, but I want to take us back to the year 2014, and I remember it's a pretty tough year for your family, right? Because yeah, you guys lost your dad, and starting our conversation that you were 19 back then. Like, did you guys immediately think about wanting to take over the business, or what was your thought process back then?
I mean, for me and I would say my eldest brother, both of us knew that eventually we would be in the family business. So maybe like after we graduate, finish army, and probably maybe like 3-4 years doing whatever we want, but the family business is always home. So we know that no matter what, we will end ourselves in the company. Based on our circumstances, we went to the family business way earlier than expected.
Way ahead of time, yeah. And how did the three of you come to make the decision to say that, hey, we will, you know, carry on, you know, your dad's traditional line of business?
Okay, so my dad passed away because of cancer, right? He was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, and the thing about pancreatic cancer, right, is that you only will find out that you have pancreatic cancer at stage 4. So with that being said, the moment that we found out that my dad had cancer, right, we immediately dropped everything and just went straight into the family business. Yeah, so it was like a unanimous thing. Like everybody knew what we needed to do, and then we just like did it.
Do you remember back then, were you serving your national service, or which part of life?
I was in the last year of my poly. Yeah, then my second brother was in army. My eldest brother was working in a company. Next day, he tendered his resignation. Yeah, so it was quite of a headache for us to deal with, but yeah.
It's been, I guess, like almost 6 long years, right? But let's talk through the 0-1 moment of turning it from, I believe your dad's original business was called JR&P Industries, and today you guys have renamed it Roger & Sons. How did you guys go from JR&P to Roger & Sons, at least that early moment of transition?
Back when we were still known as JR&P, mainly what we did was we did a lot of system furniture. So a lot of your office cubicles and your pantries and what have you not in all those offices. Back when we took over, you were doing that. And then we realized that if we carry on doing system furniture, it will not be very sustainable for the company, because we know that moving forward from there, it will just be a price war, because we will have to fight China, we have to fight Malaysia, and that's not what we wanted to do. Then together with our system furniture, we had a small arm of carpentry. So this was like when there's an office wants to do a custom pantry or things like that, or like a director's room, that's where our bespoke carpentry arm would fabricate things. So after that, we slowly realized that there was this market for us to be in where we can move over to bespoke carpentry. So we slowly moved over to that about 1-2 years, and then we officially stopped system furniture and did carpentry full-fledged.
You know, you talked about you know, when your dad got diagnosed with cancer, you guys said, okay, we have to jump in right away, right? Because you never know how much time you have. What do you remember what was the first thing in mind when you guys decided to take over the steering wheel?
Oh, there was a lot of things on our mind, man. Okay, so when we were very young, like I would say 5, 6, our dad would always bring us to his office, and then we would always like clean his office. Once in a while, he will bring us outside to the workshop, to the factory to do some fabrication stuff, like build your office panels, things like that. So from a very, very young age, when it comes to fabrication and when it comes to working of hands, we were more or less okay with it. But what was really a major challenge for us was actually running a business and running a business that we call our own. That was something where we had very, very little experience in. And at the same time, it was in this industry that I would say almost clueless. So we really depended heavily on our existing team. Our team, thankfully and fortunately, they have been very wonderful. They have been very supportive and very loyal. We are grateful to them. They have stuck by for the longest of time. We have one guy who has been in the company since the beginning of time. So the company is about 32 years old. The company started when my eldest brother was born. Yeah, so we have a carpenter who has been with us since the beginning of time. Our head carpenter has been with us for about 28 years. He's still around. And yeah, so these are the people that we really thank. And because without them, we would be totally lost in what we're doing.
Yeah, and then I'm just thinking, like, you know, you have three young millennials staring at a traditional industry. And I read that, you know, the company was also in debt at that point of time. Can you recall the most challenging part of those initial days?
I mean, it's very hard because no matter what it is, we were still doing system furniture, right? So our team back then were very used to doing system furniture. And when we decided to pivot and did baseball carpentry, none of us wanted to listen to us. There was a really, really
none of the existing
So initially it was very, very hard for them for us to convince what we are trying to do and for us to explain to them what we were trying to do. But I think slowly after a couple of months, they really realized that we are not, you know, hey these guys, you know, these three brothers, they are not here to fool around. They are here for some, like, they're here to be serious, like, this is not a joking matter. So I think after we bridged that gap, it was a bit better. I mean, I would say the same thing for our suppliers as well. So every time, sometimes when we go to visit our suppliers to, you know, just to make sure everything's okay, talk to them, things like that. At the beginning, when we first met them, all of them always ask the same thing. Y'all are doing FYP, or are y'all interns? So it's always the same thing, and it's very hard for us to build that trust and that relationship. So that was one of the things that we struggled with in the beginning. And my Chinese is horrible.
Yeah, so this this point is very interesting, right? How did you guys go about establishing yourself in an industry where partners and suppliers and even the teammates are very used to a certain way of doing things, right? And you're coming in with maybe new ideas, new perspectives. Do you remember some things you had to do? Did you take them out for coffee or some of these ideas?
Okay, so if let's say like we have a very, very difficult project, right? And then like our team don't want to do it, or some other, like our suppliers say, oh, this cannot be done or things like that. So we believe that, believe by this philosophy that if nobody wants to do it, then you just do it yourself. And if someone see you doing it, right, so slowly everybody will follow suit. So literally what we did was, even like every single installation, we were all hands on deck. The three of us went down as well together with the team. Even though maybe there are certain fabrication or certain things that we are not able to do it, that maybe the three of us, what we will do is we will help them sweep the floor, clean up, do minor things here and there, so they can focus on the big stuff. And then what we do is like take all these small little minor things off their hands. And then slowly they realize that, yeah, actually, you know what, they have a good heart, they know what. And then that's where we slowly build the relationship. Simple things like when we go out, just buy them like 100+, make them feel a bit better, things like that. Yeah.
No, I think, you know, in kind of like recalling your journey, you're making it sound quite simple. I'm pretty sure it was not that easy.
It wasn't an easy journey. I think I just put it as that. It wasn't really an easy journey.
Yeah, and maybe let's dig in deeper here, right? thinking back to those early days, what were your biggest fears?
Biggest fear, if the company closed down, the three of us are screwed. The whole family is screwed. Okay, so now my second brother is still with Roger and Sons, but at the side he does his film. He's a filmmaker. So once in a while he would do that. But back then it was literally the three of us and my mom. The four of us were in the business. My second brother's girlfriend was also in the business. And if shit hits the fan, right, everything goes down and our company...
It's five, all five.
Yeah, we are just like screwed, like, in that sense. And that was one of my biggest worry. And then somehow when we took over, the company was in debt. So that was very scary here.
Yeah. And I want to help our listeners understand that it's not like, it's almost like you're starting something from scratch, but you're actually starting something from a little bit behind, right? And that's where the risk is also a different level. Yeah. And I think we're going to spend a little bit more time talking about how you guys turned that and eventually to what it is today. But I want to dig in a little to help our listeners understand a little bit more about this industry, right? So for starters, can you give us a glimpse of what training to be a carpenter looks like? Like, do you guys watch YouTube? Is there a teacher? Like, how does that all come together?
Okay, so I'm just going to split this question into two, right? Okay, so one is that if, let's say, like, anybody who wants to start carpentry, how do you get the ball rolling and how we would do it? So there is a bit of difference.
Yes.
So if let's talk about if, like, anyone want to start woodworking. I mean, like you said, the easiest way is to watch YouTube videos and to just Google. Carpentry is actually not that difficult to start off. So yeah, just watch YouTube, have maybe a set of hand tools that you can work some stuff on. And yeah, there's no other way than, you know, just dive right straight into it. And if you make a mistake, just make a mistake. Then only when you make a mistake, that's where you learn from. Right. So I feel for me personally, that's what I do as well. Like, I watch YouTube videos, I see, maybe this guy made a table leg and he fabricated in a very unique way. And what I'll do is just watch the video and try to replicate the video. I would say generally half the time, my first attempt, I will fail. But from there, I will learn. And the world and the internet, everything is so easily accessible. So I don't think it's that difficult for you to start. But with that being said, for you to really get into carpentry and be good at carpentry, it's a different level, lah. So for us at Roger and Sons, we sort of have like an apprenticeship. You, no matter what it is, when you first come, you will always work under our head carpenter, and then you will learn from our head carpenter. You can easily be doing sanding work for maybe 6 months of your life, for 6 months when you join us. And then only after 6 months when you're done with sanding, then what you will move on to is maybe sticking on some veneers. So the process is a little bit slower, but it's also so that you understand that, you know, there are sometimes in woodworking, you don't get jobs that seem very fun, very exciting. Maybe it's just a mundane box. Only once in a while you have the cool projects. Ultimately, we will get them started with the small mundane stuff, then slowly move on to the using heavy machineries, and then slowly moving forward from there, we teach them more finesse stuff, such as joining works, making certain boxes in a different manner, things like that. Yeah.
And maybe just a really random question, but on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate your skills over the past 6-7 years since you started jumping into the business?
Wow, I would say I'm like a 7 or 8. I prefer doing finishing work. So I prefer taking the time doing sanding work, making sure like the coat of oil on your wood is done evenly. I like mundane tasks. I like fabrication, but I wouldn't say my finesse is there. I wouldn't say I'm good at like fabrication, but I prefer doing sanding work.
And I think in today's world, everyone's, you know, talking about, you know, technology and you know, building an app or the next startup, but very few people talk about going back to using the hands.
That's one of the things that we're trying to do at Roger and Sons as well. So alongside with our bespoke carpentry, we also have our education arm. So our education arm mainly is two things. So one of the things that we do is that we have workshop classes where we teach people carpentry. So and the second one that we do is we do industry talks with schools and different groups of people to let people know what the industry standards is we have in Singapore. Like, yeah, just explaining to people and the younger generation the industry standard. So like when they come out as a fresh grad, they are not so confused. So at least they know a bit what's going on in the industry and what we practice.
Right, right. And so, and, you know, as you guys have, you know, started to invest more areas, whether it's research, education, etc., can you describe your observations around the, is there a revival of this, you know, kind of like traditional niche industry in Singapore going on today?
Actually, I would say no matter what it is, we are still a sunset industry no matter what. But we do still see like a bunch of young people, freelance carpenters out there slowly taking on carpentry as a full-time job. So it's quite interesting.
And I think this is where people start to raise their eyebrows, right? Like carpentry as a full-time job. They're trying to wrap their heads around it. You know, the world is telling me to go work in a bank or go, you know, work in a law firm. And here there's actually a pocket of opportunity to be, you know, I'll call it an artisan, right? Which is not really a path that we don't really talk about. And so are you saying that Roger & Sons creates these opportunities? And how does that process look like today? Like, do I just walk up and sign up? Can you talk us through that?
As in, if you want to work as a carpenter in Roger & Sons?
For someone who wants to maybe like pick up these skills or just explore this world.
Okay. There used to be a carpentry course in Singapore, but it closed down now. In Singapore currently, I think unfortunately it is very difficult for you to find an apprenticeship. But with that being said, there are older carpenters out there that are still open to apprenticeship. Yeah. So I mean, ultimately, carpentry in Singapore as well. We do have a small community, so we are quite closely knitted. I mean, there's always room for improvement, but yeah. And I do know there are people here and there offering like SkillsFuture courses where you can go and learn carpentry here and there as well.
And so let's talk a little bit about this, the business that you're running, right? Because the business of Roger & Sons today is vastly different from the era of your father. I think you talked a little bit about whether it's the bespoke handmade part, whether it's education, etc. So earlier you talked about the traditional systems furniture, plywood laminate business, right? And then you also talked about the bespoke handmade furniture. And I was preparing for this podcast, I read that for the latter, each piece can take, 3 to 4 months from start to finish, from drying the timber to figuring out how best to utilize the tree. But in a world that's increasingly reliant on mass manufacturing, does the economics of this handmade furniture really work out?
Actually, I would say it does, lah. Because what we're trying to do is more than just a table. It's more than just a chair. I mean, ultimately, the piece that we want to create is something that should be an heirloom. And with that being said also, I mean, one of the reasons why it takes 3 to 4 months is because we are using local timber. We have to do the processing on our end. Yeah, with that being said as well, when you have a piece of table and it's made out of local wood, and you know that this wood has a heritage that maybe is longer than Singapore's independence, I mean, it says something. And to know that each table or each piece of furniture is uniquely yours and that is customized to whatever you want, I think that brings it to another level, lah. And when you know when the piece of furniture is made well and is made with the smallest of detail in mind, I feel that it's a lot different as compared to like buying a table from like online. A lot different, lah.
No, I think it's interesting because you have your traditional laminate type furniture, which is quite cookie cutter, and then you have your nice and modern furniture, and then you have your category, which is nice and modern furniture with some more of a narrative and story behind it. So every piece is there's a story behind each piece. I think.
I mean, ultimately we love what we do. For us, as long as we put food on the table, we are happy. We'd rather be able to do what we love rather than, selling out our souls.
Building a mass manufacturing system.
Yeah, we don't want to. We want to be part of the design process. We want to be part of the fabrication process. Yeah, so that's where we differ, like, in that sense.
Earlier you mentioned about using local trees. And I read about you have a local tree project. Can you share a bit more about what this project is?
Okay, so the Local Tree Project is an initiative that we started about, I would say, three, four years ago, around there. So what this project is, it's quite self-explanatory. So what we do is we use local trees to turn them into furniture.
So do you guys just walk up to a tree and chop it down and claim it to be your wood?
Yeah, so we would love to do that, but unfortunately we cannot do it because of like the bureaucracy and like that. So what will happen, right? So how this project got started is that Mandai, Mandai in Jurong Bird Park is moving over to Mandai, right? Yeah. So when that happens, they cut a bunch of trees down to make space for the bird park. And then what Mandai team approached us and say, hey, I got this bunch of trees that I chopped down because I need to make space for the bird park. Is it possible for you to turn these trees into furniture? And then slowly, that's where we visited the different sawmills in Singapore. And then we realized the amount of trees we have in Singapore. Our hearts broke, and then we decided, you know what, let's try to push for local trees. Yeah, so that's how we got the ball started. To put it into perspective, in Singapore, there's about 3 to 4 sawmills. Each sawmill has about 4 to 5 football fields worth of trees, stacked up to 5 meters high. And they are
waiting to be processed, is it?
Yes, waiting to be processed. And they are not stacked vertically, they are stacked horizontally. So you can imagine like the vast amount of trees. And there was an article that came out, I think back in 2017. In the next 13 years, there's going to be 13,000 trees getting chopped down. So yeah.
And where would these trees go otherwise?
When they are chopped down?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, so let's say I'm a developer, right? I want to develop this new piece of land, right? So what will happen is that I'll get a landscaper to go and cut down these trees.
Yep.
So when a landscaper cut down these trees, right, they are supposed to dispose of it. So sometimes they don't really dispose of it. So what they'll do is they will sell it to the sawmill.
Yep.
So the sawmill will buy off the logs and then it's processed to turn into either mulch, pellet wood, or exported mixed hardwood.
Got it.
Yeah, so these are the few things that they are turned into. Yeah, but majority of the time, you don't realize that Singapore trees can become very good timber. And there are some timber that are really beautiful. One of the species is angsana. We really love angsana. It has kind of have a look like a golden tip.
Yes.
Yeah, so there's a nice combination of brown and red hue. So it's quite interesting.
Really so what is your vision for the Local Tree Project? Because you know there's only that few of you and there's thousands of timber just stacked up somewhere in the corner of Singapore. When you guys started it, what was your vision there?
We knew that there was a potential to do something with the trees. At that point when we started, we weren't exactly too sure what we could do with the trees. So what we did was we decided, you know what, why not we just try to use it as normal timber for now first, and then from there we get to know the material a bit more, and then from there we would know whether maybe let's say angsana piece of wood cannot be worked.
Because these are all new materials.
Yeah, in the sense that no matter what, okay, so when we took over and we saw all the sawmills, right, so there wasn't like a manual to show you the various steps of it, right? So we had to come up with our own manual, our own Bible in that sense. So we had to go and figure out, we are still in the midst of figuring out, so in Singapore, right, there are mainly three species that we use, which is angsana, kaya, and ring tree. So each of them, we had to figure out, okay, so these different wood, what is the proper moisture content that we should work it at? What is the thinnest that we can go? What is the thickest that we can go? And up to a certain length, will it start to twist and warp? So these are the various things that we are trying to figure out with the material.
And this is very interesting, right? Does that mean that before you guys started the Local Tree Project, no one has really used angsana, kaya, and ring tree to make furniture?
Not really. I would say that was a small group of people, but generally not a lot of people. We use a lot of like oak, a lot of nyato, things like that, regional stuff. Don't really use a lot of local material. But now there are more people using local materials as well.
Yep. No, I think it's really cool, right? Because we're talking about material that would otherwise go into pretty low value type, whether it's a pellet or pulp, and then turning it into, basically it's Singapore wood made in Singapore furniture.
Yeah, if you come to our place at King George, right, there is this slab of wood that's about 16 feet. That wood is specifically from Clementi.
Oh, wow, okay.
We also want, that's one of the things that we also want to try to do. So it, like maybe in the future, when what they can do is that when they chop down a tree, they geotag it. So then, and then when we use the piece of wood, you know, when we pass it to you as a table, and then we can tell you this tree, and then you can tell you the location where it was. I think it tells a better yes. story. You know, and then you know you can see it. I mean, that's also one of the reasons why we came out with our R&D. The local tree project is under this whole umbrella of sustainability, of becoming carbon neutral. So that's why we have our R&D as well. So in the R&D right now, we are trying to explore a few other different areas where we can work towards carbon zero. So one of the things that we're trying to do is to work more on the local tree and to see whether we can densify the material to become stronger and become a lot more stable so that we can do much, much more things and we can go it at a slimmer profile and becomes a lot more durable. The other thing that we're trying to do right now is that a lot of people don't realize that although yes, wood is a material, right? But sometimes when you have a piece of furniture, it's not entirely sustainable. And the reason why it's not really sustainable is because why maybe your finish that you're using has high VOC. The glue that you're using has a lot of chemicals and a lot of fumes. So that's one of the things that we're trying to do. So we are working with someone, with our business partner. What we're trying to do is, you know, clamps, the muscle clamps.
Mm-hmm.
So they have this texture to it. So we're trying to harvest it to see whether we can turn it into an AC sieve. So that's one of the things that we're trying to do. And then for our finish, we are currently working with a local beekeeper. So when this what this beekeeper does is that instead of killing the bees, he will take the bees and relocate them. So when he relocate the bees, right, he will harness the honey. And when he harness the honey, he will pass us the beeswax. And with this beeswax, yep. we turn into our own wood finish. Yeah, so these are the various things that we're doing.
I can also see you guys kind of expanding into what we call the ecosystem around this industry, right?
Yes.
Whether it's adhesives and future materials.
Yeah, so it's a long journey, but I mean, we slowly have to move forward and move somewhere. So, and we feel that R&D is the only place that we can really get the ball started and really get it moving real quick through R&D.
Yeah. Yeah, so you mentioned it's a long journey, right? And I think for those of you who are listening in, you haven't seen the Roger & Sons establishment at Jalan Besar. It's beautiful. And, you know, today we can look at that and say, wow, you know, you have come so far. But do you want to maybe talk us through the lowest moment in the early days?
The lowest moment. So when we took over the business from my dad was still alive. About 6 weeks after we took over, my dad passed away. And it was that point where my dad passed away, which was the most difficult because, I mean, my dad passed away, all of us weren't having it easy. And at the same time, we were trying to pivot and to move over to bespoke carpentry. And at the same time, we were kicked out of our existing space. So with these three things happening at the same time, dad passing away, moving location, and pivoting our business
model. At the same time, yep.
Switching our business model. Everybody was so lost and nobody knew what to do. Our team didn't trust us. They were just like on the verge of leaving and everything was really chaotic. I think that was probably the lowest point in our the company, when it was very, very challenging.
And what got you guys, I guess, how do you guys emerge from that challenge?
Yeah, I would say pure grit and a bit of luck, but mostly just grit. We just had to just bite the bullet and just just push on.
And I think as you approach, it's been 6-7 years, as you approach the decade transition mark from JR&P to Roger & Sons, what does success look like for Roger & Sons, yeah, I guess, from your perspective?
The end goal is, for Roger & Sons, is for us to really leave a legacy in the industry where, you know, we change the industry for a better, we improve the practices, we improve the operations, and ultimately, if we can take this local tree project to the next level where maybe 100% of the timber used in Singapore is solely local tree project, I mean, that would be fantastic. It would be the ultimate dream.
No, and I think it's really interesting to know that you guys are really thinking about, no, it's beyond Roger and Sons, right? You're looking at an
Yeah,
industry.
it's way beyond us. This the whole thing is much bigger than us.
Exactly. And I think, you know, people look at this industry and say, oh, you know, it's just old people, it's traditional. But I think you're putting on a new lens to say, hey, how can you make this industry, you know, ready for 2030 maybe, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like, because at the same time, all the material, one of the most sustainable, and if not the most sustainable material, would be wood already.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so wood is, the good thing about wood is also because when wood, it comes from a tree, right? And then the tree gives off oxygen and takes in carbon dioxide, right? And when it takes in carbon dioxide, it locks in the carbon. So that's very good for us. Yeah, so I mean, ultimately, that's good.
Okay, and so towards the end, for folks who are listening in and they're interested to follow Roger and Sons, like, what can they look forward to, say, in 2021? I know 2020 has been a crazy year for most of us, so just kind of thinking ahead, 2021, what can people look forward to?
To start off, our own retail and our own line of furniture was always in the works, but because of COVID and because of this whole pandemic, our plans were expedited. So we already have our retail shop. So it's at retail.rogerandsons.sg, but what you guys can expect for 2021 is that the retail site will expand vastly. So that's one of the things that we have. A lot of our research will be done, so we will be releasing some news about our R&D. We also will be starting our workshops, and hopefully by 2021 we'll be able to use SkillsFuture for our workshop as well.
Yeah. And that goes back to the education arm of the business that you guys are also looking to expand. Yeah, exciting. I'm looking forward to 20. I don't know, it's 2021, 2022, 2025, where I can say, hey, Ryan, can I get a piece of furniture with the wood that originated from, you know, I don't know, Toa Payoh, right, or something?
That would be amazing.
That would be amazing. And just to wrap us up, you know, for folks who are listening in, do you have any advice, especially for the younger ones who are thinking about, hey, you know, can I do something a bit different? You know, I don't have to go to a professional services or banking. I can even explore woodworking. Any advice just based on your own journey for the past 6 to 7 years?
Don't be afraid to go against the grain. You define your own success. So it's okay for you to be maybe earning a bit lesser, but doing something that you truly enjoy. For me personally, I know that if I am stuck in an office cubicle from 9 to 5, 2 months, and I will just go straight into a hole and will not be able to come out. Find your happiness, find what you love, and just live life.
And I think what you guys are doing is also a wonderful tribute to your father, Roger. And I think we're also very excited to see what the next decade looks like for Roger and Sons.
We try our best.
Thank you for sharing your story.
Well, thank you so much for having me. Thank you so much.
And thanks for listening. I love how Ryan and his brothers are focused on something bigger than Roger and Sons as a tribute to their father and are challenging the assumptions around a sunset industry. I also hope that we can all join hands to support their sustainability work to save yet another piece of local timber from the sawmill. If what Ryan shared resonated with you, do tell your friends and perhaps have a go at one of their woodworking classes together. See you on the next episode of 0 to 1 Humans. Goodbye.